Brought to you by the Fund for American Studies. The Fund for American Studies is an educational nonprofit that is changing the world by developing leaders for a free society, offering transformational programs that teach the principles of limited government, free market economics, and honorable leadership to students and young professionals in America and around the world. Download a free ebook to learn how you can become a champion for liberty at teachingfreedom.org.
The world is a complicated place. You need someone to expose the political fakers, fixers, and takers, and to cut through the mindless chatter and misdirection to help you make sense of it all. That person is Dan Proft, and this is The Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to The Dan Proft Show. I'm John Hinderacher from Powerline, filling in for Dan tonight. And we are pleased to be joined now by James Bovard. Jim is the author of 10 books. He's a member of the USA Today Board of Contributors, a frequent contributor to The Hill, and a contributing editor for The American Conservative. Jim, thanks so much for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back on.
Jim, I want to start by talking to you about a piece that you have got in the American Institute for Economic Research. And it's titled, Sovereignty Still Rests with the People, Not Congress. And you make some really basic points in this article, taking off from something that happened during the impeachment of former President Donald Trump. Describe that to our listeners, if you would.
Well, it's sort of hard to get a handle on that impeachment process because you're kind of like peeling an onion with so many different layers of nonsense. But watching the floor action in the Senate on Thursday, I saw Congressman Jamie Raskin. He was talking about how Congress had all this power, and he leads in there. He talks about Abraham Lincoln and the Declaration of the Independence, and then he quotes the first sentence of the Constitution, and then he says, and then he announces that the sovereign power of the people flowed right into Congress, and this is why apparently Congress has absolute power and why Congress can do whatever it wants and why we don't need to worry about elected dictatorship, because that's what the founding fathers wanted. And it was an absolute travesty of American values and the history of American constitutional debates. But it's a kind of hokum that's just thrown out so commonly in Washington that people don't even notice. It's like a dog bites man story.
And Jim, can I interrupt you just for a moment there? Because what's going on here, Jamie Raskin, congressman, is being hailed for this speech as a public intellectual, you know, as an expositor of the Constitution. And people like Congressman Dean Phillips, who's a complete nobody, described him as America's professor. So it's not like this is a slip of the tongue. You know, this claim that the sovereign power of the people has all been given to Congress under the Constitution, flowed right into Congress. This is something that's being hailed as a brilliant insight by the Democrats.
Yeah, and I was, I was watching it and I was trying so hard to have new respect for Congress, but, you know, I saw that line and I just lost it. So, it's a funny part of the speech. It's on Thursday afternoon. If people want to go back and look at the tapes, Congressman Raskin is going, comprehensive vast powers that all of you know so well, and that's all of us. The power comes to all of us. And it's like, it makes Congress sound like a wonderful club, but you and I are not in it.
Yeah, we had some power once, but we gave it to them. It's kind of like Jean-Jacques Rousseau, isn't it? I mean,
maybe with a little bit of Thomas Hobbes thrown in, as far as, you know, well, you know, the sovereignty is absolute because otherwise you'd have chaos. But it's typical of how the people who the media thinks are the smartest people in Congress. This is how they talk in public. Good Lord knows what they say behind closed doors.
And so let's talk a little bit about the consequences of this. And as you say, Jim, it's kind of a dog bites man story. I mean, the lust for power among politicians is not exactly a new phenomenon, right? But let's talk about the practical implications. I mean, the Constitution is intended to describe a government of limited and delegated powers. And that has just about gone out the window.
Absolutely. And to see the strutting in the House and the Senate about all the power they have. I mean, for instance, I mean, it was only 2 months ago that Congress passed a bill that was almost 6,000 pages long, spending $2 trillion, and the members of Congress did not bother reading it before they passed it, because that was their right, because they were elected, so they have this right to spend trillions of dollars without even knowing what they're doing. But since they were, it's almost as if they think they have holy power, like they've been sainted. But that was kind of the storyline which came out after January 6th, when a number of members of Congress were saying that their holy space, their sacred space, had been violated. And I'm thinking, if we're talking about sacred space, how about the private homes that get banged up by SWAT teams that Congress finances? But that's a different subject.
Well, it's not completely different. How about all of the stores and shops and so on, as well as homes owned by people in the city of Minneapolis, for example, 2 miles of which were burned down by rioters? That was actually encouraged by a lot of government officials, including Kamala Harris, who helped to bail out some of the arsonists. And yet, if anybody penetrates their inner sanctum, oh my gosh, you know, that's a completely different story.
Yeah, it's very telling to see how the Washington media has portrayed January 6th. I mean, and you have federal judges and prosecutors basically wanting to wreck the lives of anyone who stepped into the Capitol. There was a minority of folks that day who assaulted police, and I'm all in favor of prosecuting them to the full extent of the law. But you had a lot more people who just kind of wandered in there like tourists and kind of gawked and took their photos and gee whiz and
There was at least one entrance, Jim. You can see this on video, where for inexplicable reasons, I don't know why, but there was an entrance where the guards were just kind of waving people in, you know, come on in, folks. And they're walking in and they're staying between the rope lines as they go in, and they've got their cameras like tourists, and they're taking pictures. So, yeah, there are some people who absolutely should be arrested, prosecuted, convicted, and jailed. But there's a lot of other people who just, as you say, kind of wandered in.
Right, but it's appalling to me to see the enthusiasm for charging everybody with sedition or conspiracy to overthrow the government or other charges. And I'm thinking, and a lot of what was said was simply redneck bluster. I mean, you've got all these you have all these editorial writers who went to the Ivy League schools who never lived in the mountains of Virginia and didn't hear, like, this is how rednecks talk, you know. I mean, they're always making empty threats, and it's like, but to see how this is being framed, and now you got Nancy Pelosi saying we've got to have a 9/11 type commission to find the truth. I'm thinking that's a really bad model, because the first 9/11 commission didn't find much truth. So,
well, the whole thing in some ways is kind of ridiculous, but it does exemplify the point that you make in this piece, which is the fact that the members of Congress, House and Senate alike, do not view themselves as fellow citizens with the rest of us who have been chosen temporarily to represent their constituents in Washington. They really do see themselves as the elect and as members of a class that, as you said earlier, you and I, unfortunately, just are not members of.
Yeah, and so much of that swagger has come out since January 6th. It was striking to, it's almost as if we're supposed to assume that any vague threat to congressmen is worse than anything the government could do to us. But there is an awful lot of Americans whose lives have been ravaged by Congress, things that Congress did or Congress financed. And yet that doesn't count, because they are the will of the people. And it's just, there's so much smoke blown towards congressmen, and they get this sense, but there's almost no decency as far as the Constitution, because a Bill of Rights had all these do not enter signs of property rights, due process, Second Amendment, firearms, freedom of speech. Especially this year, Congress has been showing their contempt for that. It's like, no, these are special times. But it's the same thing that we've heard in the past from Congress. And I'm hoping that the latest episode will further undermine people's trust in Congress.
Well, I certainly hope so. And as you say, not only has, the Second Amendment has been under siege for a long time, right? Even more so today, when people need it the most. But the First Amendment, I mean, the open hostility toward the freedom of speech of anybody who's not part of their club, I think is frightening.
Yes, and this is part of my concern about how they're going to try to exploit the January 6th, what happened, and they're going to try to have a say, well, we've got to ban extremism, we've got to have a new definition of domestic terrorism, and, you know, this is something which can go after free speech real fast, and there have been various times in the past where I've written things where I was denounced for, and it's like, okay, fine, you know, I'm used to that, but if you have federal charges all of a sudden, it's kind of like, well, that gets kind of dicier. So, but the systemic intolerance and the hatred, there's just so much hatred at this point in D.C., and it's being fueled by, you know, major parties and major players.
Unfortunately, that is sad but true. We are talking with James Bovard. We're going to have more with James right after these messages.
Sharpen your pencils. Class is in session with Professor Dan Proft and the Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to the Dan Proft Show. We are talking with Jim Bovard. And Jim, for this segment, I want to change the topic to something that is really close to my heart, and that is the destructive role that the teachers' unions have long played in our political life. And I want to talk in particular about your piece at the American Conservative, which is titled "Teachers' Unions Have Always Been Terrible." Tell our listeners what that's all about.
Well, this is pulling from some pieces that I've done actually over the last 40 years on some of the horrendous abuses that the National Education Association and American Federation of Teachers have done. Folks don't realize how the teachers have been in the forefront of lowering educational standards. There was the National Education Association was saying 40 years ago that the back to basics was basically a right-wing conspiracy. And it's like... reading standards have fallen so much in schools in spite of a huge amount of increase in spending, and part of the reason things have gone down is because the teacher unions have pushed to have lower standards, and teacher unions have also pushed a huge amount of propaganda in the schools. So instead of spending more time on reading and math, we're having death education or climate education or, you know, gender education. It's worked out very badly, and it's part of the reason American schools are falling further and further behind other parts of the world.
Yeah, as you say, the teachers' unions have been a terrible force for a long, long time, and there's been no accountability. You know, in my state, Minnesota, the organization that I run, a think tank called Center of the American Experiment, we recently put out a report that talked about how spending on K-12 education has skyrocketed for decades, higher, 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 in response to these endless demands of the teachers' union, while results have slipped lower, lower, lower. And why is it, Jim, do you think, that there is so little accountability in public education?
Well, there's a number of reasons. First of all, it's a government program, and they're very hard to make accountable. But what you've had is that the teacher unions have basically bought the politicians, so the politicians have handed control of the schools to the teacher unions. And there's thanks to that, we have no-fault teaching. It doesn't matter what happens. It's never the fault of the teacher. The answer is to spend more money, as you said. But there's also teacher unions have become accustomed to just demonizing anybody who doesn't kowtow to their demands. I mean, you had the Chicago teacher unions a couple months ago saying that the push to reopen schools is based on sexism and racism. And it's like, well, no, actually it's based on science, because you look at the Catholic schools and they're reopening and they're doing fine in most places. But you have, I mean, this is one of the most brazen power abuses in recent American history. You have a union who's basically flexing its muscles, and as a result, you've got a huge increase in students becoming more ignorant. And the thing we're always hearing about here in Maryland, for instance, is we've got to raise property taxes and spend more money to close the achievement gap. But this pandemic shutdown has boosted the number of Black and Hispanic students failing in schools by 500%. But, you know, it doesn't matter because teachers feel entitled to a zero risk entitlement and full pay, unlike a lot of other American workers, like grocery store workers.
So it seems to me, Jim, that one possible silver lining of this whole COVID shutdown fiasco is that people, some people at least, are finally starting to catch on to the teachers' unions. I think in a lot of places around the country, parents in particular are paying attention, and parents want the schools to open for a lot of reasons, but primarily because remote learning has turned out to be a disaster, as you just said. I mean, it varies from place to place, but something like a third of all the kids just don't do it. You know, they never show up. They never check in. They don't take a test. They don't complete an assignment. They're just gone. And naturally, it's going to be the kids who are most at risk, who are most likely just to drop out when school becomes remote. So I think parents across the country are finally catching on to the fact that, you know, here we have the World Health Organization. We have the CDC saying, no, schools should open. In Europe, the schools are reopening. As you said, the Catholic schools, private schools reopening. And yet the public schools are just willfully out of business as a result of the demands of the teachers' union. And do you think parents are finally starting to catch on?
Some are. I mean, I'm not sure if it's enough, but I mean, this is brazen hostage taking. But it's the same thing the teacher unions have done sporadically over, you know, for 40 years. But there's such an adverse impact, and the school shutdown is a major reason why so many women have left the workforce because, you know, they got to stay home and take care of the kids. But there's such an entitlement mentality by so many of the teacher activists as far as, like, you know, any teacher is like, should, it's sort of like the members of Congress. Every teacher should be considered holy and not exposed to any risk. But, you know, there was a wonderful saying, saying by Henry Thoreau Henry Thoreau said, a man sits as many risks as he runs. And part of what's so bad about this is that the teachers are acting like shutting down the schools has no adverse impact. But, you know, this is blighting people's lives. You've got a huge increase in young people committing suicide, a huge increase in depression. And, you know, this is a lost year that a lot of these kids will never get back.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. Now, again, if we're looking for a silver lining, one thing that has happened is that a lot of parents have been forced to start thinking about alternatives to the public schools, which are just not serving their kids. And so we have seen a real increase in charter school enrollment, private school enrollment, homeschooling. And what do you think? I mean, this could have some positive long-term benefits if parents really start to think seriously about what the alternatives to these failing public schools could be.
I agree. I mean, that is one of the brightest rays of hope from this entire pandemic. Parents are waking up. Parents need to recognize that parents are recognizing that they can't trust the government for their own children's mental growth. And having parents take more responsibility for that would be a huge plus. I mean, not only that, but so much of what the kids are forced to read in school is no wonder kids hate reading. I mean, it's sort of like Mark Twain's story in The Jumping Frog. We had to spend 6 weeks on that. It's like, I never wanted to read Mark Twain again until I left school and then found out, oh, Mark Twain's wonderful, but, you know, the things that you read in school is like being beaten over your head.
Well, it's only getting worse, too, Jim. I mean, I'm sure Mark Twain is one of the better things surviving in the public schools now. You know, they're having him read all kinds of tendentious nonsense. It's all race, class, gender, just horrible stuff, you know, that, among other things, is just boring.
Yes, boring is the most important thing. I mean, I think back to my years in public schools, they were the most brain-numbing experience of my life. And during that time, I lost my joy of reading. As soon as I graduated, the joy of reading came back. So, I mean, that's part of the reason why I'm skeptical about government schools and government unions.
Well, let's hope that as more parents explore options and actually take advantage of alternatives to the public schools, one consequence of that ought to be growth in the school choice movement. You know, as parents see other parents pursuing different alternatives, I think it's going to be hard for the teachers unions to forever block real meaningful school choice, especially in urban areas. We're up against a break here, Jim. Jim Bovard, thank you so much for being on the program. We'll be back with more after this. It's a nice day to start again. Come on, it's a nice day for a white wedding.
Exposing political fakers, fixers, and takers. He's Dan Proft, and this is the Dan Proft Show.